Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Here's Miller and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Miller and Condon on a Monday. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. Trent Condon, Ken Miller with you for the next couple of hours. Thanks for spending some of your morning here with Trent and myself as we will talk sports with you. The BMW of Des Moines guest list looks like this. Dave Sproul, our friend from Ames, KASI, the Cyclones play, and they will, on KASI. This throwing a salt in your wound there this morning, TC. Mm-hmm. But Iowa State plays at KASI. Dave Sproul will join us. There was a Zoom with Matt Campbell after we got off the air with Dave last week, so we'll recap that. Jamie Pollard has a Zoom call scheduled for 1 o'clock today. I'm assuming we'll hear some logistics, some particulars as to how many people will be allowed into Jack Trice 1 week from Saturday, maybe tailgating guidelines laid out. We will hear from Jamie Pollard at 1 o'clock. We will speculate with Dave Sproul at 10:30 and look at the team overall, what we've learned since the last time we spoke, as we're at that point, two a days with our friend Dave Sproul. Cody Goodwin writes for the Des Moines Register. He covers high school sports. He was at Roosevelt Valley on opening night of the season. Roosevelt hanging around the Rough Riders. Coach Moore had the team playing well, but Valley pulled away at the end. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the transfers that were denied pretty late in the process, but to see if there's any wiggle room there. There may be a whole list of schools joining the "we're not playing after this week" list. As Iowa City schools, I would have to think that similar to Des Moines public schools are hoping for a reprieve from the governor, a ruling from a judge. You're going to need something.
Because as it sits right now, this is going to be it.
This is it for them, yeah.
And we saw that Friday night, a number of teams that decided to have their senior night on the first night out, just because we don't know after this week what it's going to entail.
Roosevelt will this week. Yeah. They play East, right? I think they do.
Those are the two biggest school districts that are dealing with this. Of course, Iowa City and Des Moines, yeah. But there's others out there. Ames, the continued change. And the numbers, Iowa City and Ames. number two for Iowa City, number one for Ames. So Ames does have Iowa City beat in that aspect.
So far, I mean, somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I kind of started to smile a little bit, then it turned into a frown. I guess that is this year's Cyhawk.
Right.
You know, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, it was witty, but at the same time, you're talking about a disease and the fact that one of the two schools in the Cyhawk won't be playing football this fall. And then Scott Dockerman, speaking of Iowa, he will join us, but he's going to be moving over. He's going to be doing more Iowa State, and we'll talk to him about that. He already has, as there won't be any Hawkeye football until who knows when, seeming more likely that January is indeed the target date, but we shall see. Lots to get to. Baseball, trade deadline, the Padres seemingly have turned over their entire roster and what was a pretty good baseball team. Trent, it's just unbelievable. Transactions just flying out of them. I mean, I could just probably say this about everybody. They're all looking up at the Dodgers. But the Padres...
On what 117 win pace, the Dodgers, by
are
the way.
They really?
Yeah, I did that math this morning.
What are your Twins, by the way? Yikes.
Five straight losses, get swept by the Tigers. They've now been swept by the Royals and the Tigers this year.
And here come the White Sox for a three-game set starting tonight with Giolito.
If you would have told me either of those things before the year, there's no way it would have been. Yeah.
Royals are a pesky team, Trent.
They are. And the Tigers have a chance to the playoffs.
They do.
I don't think it's highly realistic, but they have the Twins.
16. So right now the Jays are the 8th seed. They're 18. Yeah, you know what? They're hanging in there. Detroit's 500, 16 up and 16 down. Eight teams are going to get in. First and second place team in the three divisions, and then the next two best records will take seed 7th and 8th in both leagues. So
Hey, speaking of that, so at the beginning of this, when this came out, the opening day,
right?
We got the doubleheader of games that Thursday. And, oh, by the way, we're going to expand this out. And here's, we're going to actually do an 8-team bracket in each league. 16 teams will make the playoffs. At the time, I remember seeing something where the top seed will get their choice of the wildcard teams of who they're going to play. Since then...
No, it's been nothing. I think that went away.
But that went away? Okay.
Trent, there were so many different variations of how this playoffs were going to look like.
Yeah.
I mean, as you mentioned, right up until opening day is when they finally settled on the format that they're going to go through or go with. So we're a month away. In fact, yesterday was 4 weeks away from the end of the regular season, September the 27th. So there's 4 weeks left of baseball. It's been great.
It has been great. It's been exciting, and it's been – there is a part of that, though, that my freak-out factor would be a lot more if the Twins went – still going to make the playoffs. And coupled with this playoff structure, it's a 3-game series, all played, quote unquote, on the road.
Right.
But if they bubble this thing up,
right,
and the continued speculation is...
I don't think
it
matters if it's a bubble or on the road. I mean, there's no fans.
Right, but still the travel that's involved, you still have to do that. And you're playing in your home ballpark where you know the dimensions, you know everything a little bit more. There is a little bit of advantage of playing in your home ballpark, which will be taken away because the American League, apparently what they're going to do is send them out to Southern California, playing Petco in San Diego, playing Dodger Stadium. Those would be the two ballparks for the American League.
It's Texas for the National
League. Yeah, which would be Houston and Arlington for those two. Now, are they just doing that just so there isn't any home field advantage for...
No, I think it's precautionary.
No. I'm speaking...
Oh, I see.
Why
flipping
wouldn't you
them
send
around.
The National
I see
League
what you mean. Yeah. I see you. Yep.
To the Dodger Stadium and to Petco.
The answer to your question would be, and I don't know the answer, but I certainly think you're on the right track.
Yeah, that's the only thing that makes sense, is that... You know, flip-flop it that way and making a true neutral environment when you're going in that direction. But if the Twins were going through this and now they're looking up and they're 2 games back in the standings... And
they would have Oakland.
They'd be out. They'd be out with the structure right now, and I'd be freaking out more, but the Tigers aren't going to catch them. They're still going to be a playoff team, and regardless if it's the Rays or if it's the A's in the first round, it doesn't intimidate you the same way that the Yankees did.
No.
That'd be another part of it. If the Rays weren't playing so ridiculous, I'd probably be freaking out more about this too, but they can't hit left-handers. I don't know why. This is a team that had historical offensive numbers a year ago.
And now that team's the White Sox.
And now they can't do anything. They can't do anything. They have 6 guys in their lineup right now that cannot hit left-handers. Max Kepler's a lefty, you expect that. But up and down the lineup, guys that have absolutely mashed against lefties in the past, they've been bad. There's no power. The power of the Bomba squad that we saw a year ago isn't there. Injuries are a part. Buxton's been hurt. Well, you anticipate that. Donaldson's been hurt. Well, kind of another guy you anticipate is going to be hurt. They've been banged up, but this is not the team they anticipated that I was going to see. They can turn around. They beat up Giolito back in the first start way back a month ago.
They get him tonight.
And they'll get him tonight. And then from there, the Tigers next weekend, they're going to be throwing a couple more lefties against him. They got to figure that out. And the Twins... They don't have to go out there and make any kind of blockbuster. They need a right-handed bat, though. That's what they need to do.
I heard they're sniffing around pitching.
They are, yeah, and they're looking for that top-level pitching to come in. Lance Lynn doesn't want to come to Minnesota. His time there in Minnesota wasn't very good. And though the manager's different, the front office is still the same. I don't see that one
I didn't
happening.
Realize there was a, a rift.
There was.
A schism.
Yeah. They tried to reach out to Cincinnati about Trevor Bauer, but all of a sudden Cincinnati says...
Trevor Bauer's going to win the Cy Young in the National League. Well, he was until this weekend when the Cubs got to him a little bit.
And then we talk about, still the Twins are, record-wise, a good baseball team. And you look over the National League, there's only 4 teams with a winning record. 4 teams in the whole league. We're going to be talking about those wild cards are going to be 27 and 33, 25 and 35 might get you in. That's how bad it is over there after the first couple of teams
in
the National League.
Let me look at that real. Let me find the 7 and 8 seeds right now. The 7 and 8 seeds, the 7 seed would be Colorado. They're 17 and 17. The next would be, I guess you go by percentage right now, and that would be the Phillies, and they're a game below 500 of 14 up and 15 down.
Them and the Marlins. Brewers, yeah, have the same record. And yeah, the Brewers would be basically a half game out from that position, and the Cardinals are right there too. Jeez. But we're talking under 500 teams here. It's the Dodgers and everybody else. I mean, how big is that gap between them and everybody else in that league?
Massive.
Yes.
Massive.
And I haven't seen much Dodger baseball this year.
It's hard to.
I mean, it is.
You won't see any of the teams that we get on. Mm-hmm. I mean, no Cardinals, no Brewers, no Cubs, unless they get a nationally televised game, which they will. Mm-hmm. That'll be your only opportunity to see them. I mean, it's good and bad, right? It's bad for that reason, but it's good that you don't have to stay up until 10 o'clock, although you like it, to see the Twins go at one of those West Coast teams. Anyways, I didn't watch as much as I thought I would, and I'm talking about college football. The curtain went up on college football. Mm-hmm. Central Arkansas, Austin Peay, the first play of the game, was certainly one that, maybe the most memorable play of the entire game. I couldn't get into it like I thought I would, and I think it was probably a combination of reasons. A, I know Central Arkansas is going to be on a couple more times, mm-hmm. Including one coming up relatively soon, right?
Yeah. Don't they play Thursday?
Against, I don't remember.
Yeah. I think but they turn around really quickly.
Right. Yeah, they play UAB Thursday on ESPN something. You're 100% right. And then Austin Peay, I mean, you won't watch those, so... I tried, but there's playoff basketball, mm-hmm. playoff hockey. Was there a baseball game with one of the local teams at night? When did the Reds and the Cubbies play? I think they played at night. Yeah, they did. Or no, they played at 3 o'clock. Was that the doubleheader
day?
That was a double dip day. Yeah, that was right. Yep. That was a doubleheader day. Craig Kimbrell had a chance to come in and didn't go well. For Craig Kimbrell. So the Reds had an opportunity to make up some ground on the Cubs, but the Cubs held serve. The Indians and the Cardinals were going after each other. Crazy ending on one of the games when Yadier Molina was picked off, for crying out loud. He thought the ball was foul, and what is he doing? I mean, this is a veteran player. Look, everybody makes mistakes, mm-hmm. but that one's going to come back to bite. The best series in basketball, I think, is the team that features the two Cyclones going head-to-head, Niang and Morris and their respective teams, and they will play again. Game 7, Denver and Utah. NBA-wise, I thought that yesterday when I settled into my chair to watch the Raptors and the Celtics that I was going to be thoroughly entertained. I was thoroughly disappointed in the outcome of that game. Not that it was, do I want the Raptors to win? Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. But there was never any drama in the entire game, Trent. It was, for the most part, 10, 15, 18-point lead the entire time.
So I didn't get into that one until late, and I was,
you didn't miss anything.
I was just waiting for that run. You know, fourth quarter, you see that. So
every game makes one.
It never came. They never could get over a hump. Van Fleet was terrible.
Yeah, he wasn't alone.
Ananobi couldn't shoot. Mm. It was just on and on and on. It was one of those games for the Raptors where you chalk it up. It's not your day.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. You're not going to have that comeback and make it a game. But yeah, I was right there with you. I thought we were going to see not an epic game one, but a good solid game one to kind of see where these teams are. Now, do you buy in that the Celtics are that much better, or do you just chalk it up to what I said?
It's just chalk it up to just what you said, but boy, oh boy, I mean, with Tatum, you know who's really good? And I wasn't sure what kind of NBA career he's going to have. Marcus Smart. He's a good player.
Well, he's a plus defender.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. And he poured in 21 yesterday, mm-hmm. Trent. I mean, he had it going offensively yesterday.
He's also a guy, though, when it's not going offensively, he's still going to get his shots. Uh-huh. And those are the kind of games where, yeah. What are you doing?
Right.
Because he's not certainly a great shooter by any means, but he can fill it up. He can get uh-huh. hot at times. But what he is, that plus side defensively that he is, he's one of those weird guys. How does he translate? Well, because he's so tough. And he's going to get up mm-hmm. and he's going to guard and he's going to do those kind of things. He's going to get there. And this Theis guy, Theis?
Yeah, yeah.
Where do they find these guys?
I don't know.
It's just, we're not talking about, of course, the guys we know that are taking, you know, the lottery, mm-hmm. the NBA, and all right, here comes this European. These guys just seemingly fall out of the air, and then they're really, really good players. Jokic a little bit different for the Nuggets. I mean, this is a guy that kind of was coming on, and you saw that right away with him, but... Seemingly, you turn on an NBA game and there's just some random European, never heard of course, don't have that background. Oh, yeah, I remember this guy randomly at SMU the year they made the turn. There's none of that. And they all turn out to be, not all, but a lot of them just turn out to be really, really good players. I was impressed the little bit that I saw of him yesterday.
Well, he didn't miss too much. Again, there was not a lot in that one. All right, so let's go back to Friday night. We'll save the NHL for at some point. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. I watched most of the games this past weekend. But I want to go to Friday night, and I want to go with the ineligible rulings that came down.
Yeah.
and specifically when they came down. It seemed awfully late in the process that a couple of these guys, I guess Southeast Polecat Alignment, of course, we know that the Ankeny Hawks game you did, you had Hawks Jags on Friday night. That wasn't much of a game. The Ankeny Hawks have really seemed to have a leg up on that town now. It is an Ankeny Hawk town this year. I mean, the basketball's been good. The baseball's been good. Now the football's off to a terrific start. But it could have been a better start because they had a transfer ruled ineligible at the very last minute.
Yeah, Arlen Bruce, a kid that comes up.
Now, what position is he going to play?
In college, he'll be a slot receiver.
Okay.
And when he was in Kansas City at his high school, they used him a little bit of everything. You know, they put him in jet sweeps and they do that. So I think he had big yardage totals
rushing.
He
really did. He ran the ball incredibly well.
But in the next level, he translates to be a slot receiver. He is the Tyrone Tracy, the heir apparent to Tyrone Tracy with what I was doing now offensively. That is what he's looked at. And seeing him in the sidelines, not a big guy. He's 5'10".
Yeah.
Not
well, I saw a picture of him and Breck side by side.
Yeah.
And it means,
pretty significant.
There's a huge difference.
Right. Between those two guys.
By the way, Brecht was, he was unguardable.
Well, and first play of the game, he puts it on the turf. It's a
did he?
Scoop and score for Centennial. Those are the only points of the night.
No, that's how it happened.
Or the Jags. Yeah, they put him in the backfield, handed him the ball, and looked like he didn't even know it was coming to him. It looked like a kind of a read option type of play. He just put it on the turf. It was scooped up and went the other way. And then the next play, they get the ball right back. He doesn't block. Like, oh, boy. And then all of a sudden, kind of woke up a little bit.
They got him the football. And
a couple of touchdowns, made a tough catch over the middle. He's going to be a really, really nice player if baseball is what he ultimately decides to do. That's a conversation on the side. Back to Arlen Bruce, though.
So what, I know that social distancing and everything, and you probably can't talk to all the people before the game normally that you would have.
Yep.
But what was kind of the feeling at that football game when it became apparent that he wasn't going to play and wasn't going to win an appeal quickly?
A lot of frustration. A lot of frustration. This is a young man that seemingly did it right. And they knew the rules in place that his two younger brothers, if they didn't move up to Ankeny with them, basically had to give up the guardianship, and did. His mother did
that.
That's
a paper move only, but sure.
But did that to their uncle, and that's the way it is, and they're staying down in Kansas City. Seemingly did everything right. Had residency, everything was established there, and you look at the way that things are written and reading through it.
They checked every box?
It looks that way. So what is it? Is it just Tom Keating says, I'm going to rule with an iron fist here? Why does Arlen Bruce not able to play, but we see Jake Rubley playing for Valley? What's the difference?
Did Rubley's entire family move?
That would be the guess. Is that?
But Cody Goodwin going to join us and shed more light on that at 11:05.
But you look at it, and again, it creates one of those. Well, maybe it's different. I don't know the financial situation of the Bruce family compared to what the Rubley situation is, but maybe it's financially easier for the Rubleys just to do just that. Go back to that Denver Post article that said, there's some
business opportunities
here. Are there business opportunities for Arlen Bruce's mother? We don't know. Her whole family and able to make this work, or to make this work, and he wants to play a senior year. We're going to do this, and we think this is best for our son. And Tom Keating says no.
So what?
And the Iowa High School Athletics Association says no because the whole family doesn't come.
What about this, Trent? And I wonder if this has been looked at, speculated about, talked about in any way. So Bruce comes up here. He enrolls, mom's with him, they check those boxes, they get to Christmas, and they take their exams before they call it a first semester. Do they have to stay? Do they have to re-enroll in January and go back to school and actually graduate and walk with, in his case, the Ankeny Hawk program? Because if they don't, good for you, Tom Keating. If they do have to stay, then I think they're making a mistake. I don't think that they should open any pathway to a kid transferring up just for football, and he's here September, October, November, takes his exams before Christmas, and boom, the family's back in Kansas City.
His circumstances are different because he's graduating
Not
early
just him, anybody.
And enrolling at Iowa. So leaving him aside and just taking player X that is doing
that. Player X might be Southeast Polk's kid from Illinois who got ruled ineligible, right?
So in order for that to go down, I don't think it can just be for football. You hear stories all the time of kids that move school districts for a myriad of different reasons. Should they be ineligible?
Move school districts or move school within the state?
Well, or out. I find it difficult. We don't know the circumstances behind it. We don't know everything that goes into this.
Well, it's a football circumstance, first and foremost.
It is. Is that a bad thing? He's a football player.
It depends if he asked the kid his position that he took.
Yeah. I don't worry about those kids.
Uh-huh.
Be better. Bad things happen.
Right.
I mean, I think we've all talked to that guy that said if he just would have got his opportunity, he would have played. Well, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reality. Mm-hmm. I really don't have much.
So if somebody comes in and transfers and say it's Rubley, we'll use him.
Mm-hmm.
And the family goes back to Denver.
Yeah.
Right before Christmas, they pack up and they go back home. And Valley's won the state championship with him at quarterback.
Yeah.
Is that legit?
Yes.
You think it is?
Yeah.
That they're here
We're dialing state championships with Rico Gabbert.
Did he go the entire year?
Yes, I believe so.
There you go.
So that's what you want.
I do.
You want to be locked into a school regardless.
Yes. If you're going to go to school, you start and you end the year. You don't bail halfway to go back. Because that tells us that you were, manipulating the system a little bit. That's me. Maybe I'm get off my lawn, 61-year-old Ken, right? but that seems to, have a little bit of common sense.
It does, yeah. It certainly is common sense. But also the common sense is this is a football move.
I get it.
And football's over in November.
This is an entirely different year than any other year we're ever going to have. I totally put that check mark on that side of the ledger. Get it.
I completely get where you're coming from, though. You're going to start it, end it in the
same
school district.
Walk with your kids at graduation. Mm-hmm. Go to prom. Well, you don't have to go to prom.
Right, yeah. But I get what you're saying, yeah.
Right. It just doesn't feel like... I don't know. And there's a bunch of them. Now, I don't know how many kids were ruled ineligible at the last minute. We know that Bruce and Ankeny. I think Tommy Birch was covering... No, he covered a game. Did he have a game that had Southeast Polk in it or not? I'm not 100% sure, but I think he tweeted it that there was a player, an lineman. Did you see that? The lineman?
I didn't.
I think Birchie tweeted it. And there's another kid, the kid that does recruiting for the Redshirt,
Matthew Bain.
Matthew Bain.
Mm-hmm.
Might have come from him. Let's get Brian in here. We're going to hear from Cody Goodwin on high school football and coming up here at 11:05. Dave Sproul and Iowa State, bottom of the hour. Scott Dockerman about an hour away from The Athletic. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I have a couple pieces of information as a longtime retired coach. I can throw out there. There's two. Basically, what you're talking about here is two rules. One is the open enrollment rule, and the other is transfer rule. And both of them are the enforcement of what you're talking about. A student that transfers only for a specific sport is supposed to be controlled by the incoming school district. They're supposed to enforce it themselves. So consequently, some do, some don't. I know my last teaching and coaching position in another part of the state, there was a player that contacted me and said that player said what they wanted to transfer to my school district. At that point, all I can do is say, you can't talk to me about this. You have to go to the administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it then becomes a question of whether or not the two administrations will allow her. The outgoing administration, they would not okay it. Why? Because it was specifically for a sport.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's supposed to be enforced. However, when you got a kid coming from out of state, how are you going to enforce that? I agree with, I don't know which one of you gentlemen is saying that you shouldn't be allowed. This shouldn't, it is not supposed to be happening, but it does. And it's because it's left to each individual school district to police themselves. And that's going to be, what, 300 and some different school districts choosing to decide it themselves the way they going to decide it, whether it's going to help them or not, whether it's going to hurt them or not. And so consequently, that's why there's all kinds of differences. And let's be honest, you got a kid that's a D1 level kid.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of school districts going to take advantage of that and let that kid play, regardless of the fact that they may not even be actually leaving the home from one part of Des Moines to another, just a mailbox.
Right, right.
I've heard that.
Yeah,
sure.
And there's been
Brian,
a lot of
thanks for
stories.
The call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, the stories of You just put a P.O. box in whatever school district you're looking for, and you go that direction. There's so many different things. And hearing the stories of young men, you know, making the transfer their senior year, whatever it may be, inside of our borders, inside central Iowa, if you will, and that can rub some people the wrong way. Ultimately, what is the goal of high school sports?
Teamwork. Teach lessons.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty good life lessons being learned here for the young man that lost his starting spot. It's a life lesson.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
Right.
But things aren't handed to you. And there's going to be somebody better out there.
What about the life lesson? And look, it happens every day of pushing the envelope, taking liberties with some rules. Trent, if they come in and they stay the entire year, I think it's great. Let them play. Let them play. And there was more let them play on Friday night on Twitter. But if they come in and they don't even make it until Christmas and they're back in their hometown, wherever that may be, it just doesn't pass the smell test to me.
What's best for the kid? That's what I always come back to. It's ultimately about the student and the students in general. Is this the best thing for Arlen Bruce? Is this the best thing for McCullough, who's the third wide receiver for Ankeny? Well, you can make the argument for him. He had a nice night on Friday night. I mean, he's their third receiver, and he's a really good player. It's not like Arlen Bruce, I don't think, is going to be the difference between Ankeny and being a team that can make a run to the Unidome and not.
Well, who's the running back? What kind of?
He's a bigger kind of running back. Had 1,000 yards last year. He's a nice player too. They're fine offensively. They're in really good shape there. This Ankeny team, I walked away incredibly impressed. I don't think this is the difference between them being a state championship team and just getting to the final eight, something like that. They're good enough even without Arlen Bruce. Him aside,
what's best? They're better with him.
They are better with him.
Right.
But what's best for the student? He did everything that he was asked. He did everything that you would think to make him eligible.
Are they bending the rules? And are we teaching them right away that, you know what, you can bend the rules and you can buy life? And a lot of people do.
It's a real life lesson, though, right?
It is. No, it absolutely is. There's no question about that.
That's a reality. It's a difficult question that really doesn't have a full answer.
I wonder if Tom Keating, who I don't think is doing any more media, seemingly.
Yeah, we talked to him, a week or two ago?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. I wonder if they've got a plan in place. I mean, can you vacate it? If the Valley wins the title, the state title, can you vacate it because the Rubleys skedaddle back home?
No.
But should there be a rule in place before the season starts that we know that?
So kid's family, team wins a state championship, Ankeny basketball won a state championship, and a kid's parent got a job and they had to leave. They had to vacate that?
Well,
I mean, that's what you're putting in place.
No, but that's a little different. That was pre-pandemic. And this kid, the Ankeny State basketball championship, they were in school the entire year. But if you're not going to stay in school.
You can't put that rule in place.
Why not?
If any kid has to leave the school district after winning a state championship,
did he start school here? Was he a freshman, junior, sophomore, junior?
Well, now you're putting these rules in place that don't have...
It seems like a hit and run, Trent, that they're coming
in.
It
absolutely is a hit and run. But that's the reality of the situation. That's what it is.
I don't like it.
I know you don't like it, but you can't put these special rules in place because of this.
Well, it is. The circumstances are what they are, right? We're in a pandemic.
We are.
And they're not playing football in those states that those kids came in for. And if there would have been football there, they would have stayed there. So it's giving an opportunity to play. I like that part about it. But if they're going to take that opportunity, this is my take, they should have to stay the entire year. Period. Step down, next case.
I think we found the heir apparent to Tom Keating in Boone. Can you make the drive to Boone every day?
No.
Well, he works out of Cedar Rapids.
He
may be able to work out of Ankeny.
That's right, he does, because he was the storm got him.
Yes.
KXNO and iHeart want to help you pay your bills. Text the keyword home.
Oh, boy.
How about that? Home to 200-200 right now. It's your chance to win $1,000. Home to 200-200.
You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest.
All right, Iowa State conversation coming up next with Dave Sproul from KASI 1430 in Ames. We look forward to speaking with him about that. We've got Cody Goodwin coming up, covers high school sports for the Des Moines Register, and Scott Dockerman covers the Hawks, at least for now, and the Big Ten for the Athletic. Miller and Condon till noon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. 610-106-1020.
Testimonial.
Ken Miller, Trent Condon, Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO.
And now on 106.3 FM.
Welcome back, Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. Take you until noon. 11:05, Cody Goodwin covers Iowa High School sports from the Des Moines Register. He'll join us. A Hawkeye conversation in about 45 minutes or thereabouts with Scott Dockerman. Right now, Dave Sproul back with us. We are on the precipice of college football in Ames. We may, sometime this week, find out a kickoff time.
Yeah,
I thought maybe we might get it yesterday.
I was right there with you. Yeah. I was waiting anxiously to get that press release or at least see it to come across Twitter, and never did.
I was surprised too. Dave Sproul is going to help us out with that, but we got to talk about the game that he had on Friday night.
My goodness.
Holy mackerel.
Dave,
arena
what time,
score.
What time did you get back to Ames after an 81-54 Dodger victory over the Little Cyclones? That is a long ride back after a long, long night of football. What did it take to get you back to Ames?
I think it was around midnight when I got back home. It's about an hour, a little more than that, from here to Fort Dodge to begin with. And by the time we get everything packed up and ready to go, it's 11 o'clock. And it was a late night. There was a lot going on. It was a lot of fun, actually, to announce that game because I'm a big fan of lots of touchdowns and high scoring and all that. And at some point, though, it was just kind of ridiculous.
81-54. Yeah. I've had those games. I'm going to guess, Dave, not a real long post game after that one.
Not terribly long. I mean, what can you say? Well, our defense was not so great, and offense was okay. I guess, it was. Only so much you could say about a game like that, where it's just crazy, and it went off the rails from the start too.
Mm. 8 touchdowns for Taman Lipsey. Now we know him as a basketball player. Didn't play last season. Had what, a torn ACL? Is that what it was that kept him out last season? He's a top 100 basketball recruit, but pretty good on the football field, huh? Just 8 touchdowns.
Jeez. Yeah, some of that athletic ability on the court seems to translate to...
And they got beat.
The highlight for me with him was a play with down close to the goal line, and the snap went about 5 feet over his head, and he had to run back, make an over-the-shoulder grab to catch the snap, and just kept going and rolled out as he did and looks in the end zone. He finds open man and just dumps it to him there in a little pocket in the end zone. I mean, that's just the kind of amazing athlete he is. And he would have had one more touchdown, but he was stopped inches short of the goal line on the last play of the first half.
Jeez, that's unbelievable. 130-something points. Did we have a correspondent there, I wonder, at Football Friday?
I don't know.
Wouldn't you just get to a point where you stop calling?
Right. You know? Wait for every third touchdown.
Right. Unbelievable. Well, Dave Sproul's with us, and glad you recapped that with us, Dave. 130-something points. Anyways, I hope you didn't do the rundown, the scoring at the end of the game. You wouldn't have got home till 1 o'clock for crying out loud.
I tried. I just kept it to the second half after halftime.
Gotcha. Well, let's get to the here now, and that's Iowa State. You had Coach Campbell, part of a Zoom on Friday, Jamie Pollard coming up in 2.5 hours. Let's speculate on that before we find out what was said on Friday. I have to assume, and I've seen nothing as to what the subjects will be addressed with Pollard at 1 o'clock, but I'm guessing attendance. Are they going to stay with that number? Maybe tailgating guidelines. What do you anticipate that Jamie Pollard is going to share with the media, yourself included, at 1 o'clock, Dave?
Yeah, I think most likely it will be attendance related, and it's hard to imagine they're going to stick at 50% capacity after the numbers we've seen in the past week and you know, the New York Times pegging the growth here in Ames. Then their numbers were based on the entire Story County population, but they pegged Ames as the number one, you know, in the nation in terms of growth and the number of cases per capita. In light of that, it might be kind of a hard sell to come out and say, yeah, well, we're just going to stay at 50% and see how it goes. So I wouldn't be surprised if the cutback on the attendance figures a little bit, and maybe we'll get an update as to how many COVID-19 cases have been confirmed among the athletic teams at Iowa State within the athletic department. When Matt Campbell was on a Zoom call Friday, he put it at minimal. He didn't give a number on it. He just said it's a minimal number of COVID-19 cases on the football team at the moment, and that, you know, for the most part, he felt that was going well. But that's only part of the story when it comes to the athletic department as a whole.
Dave, what's it like around campus now? As we're in the middle of this, the students have been back for a few weeks, and as you're living your day-to-day life in Ames, just how different is it, and how concerned is the general population up there in Ames with the numbers we're continuing to see?
I think there is some concern, obviously. I mean, it's understandable when those kind of numbers come out. I don't know if I can give you much of a vibe around campus because I go about three places, work, the grocery store, and, you know, I might cruise around on my bike a little bit around town, but I really have stayed away from most anywhere large groups of people can get together, especially around the campus area. So maybe that puts me a little out of touch, but it also keeps me safe. So I've no regrets on that front. But hopefully people are getting the message. I think the grown-ups, quote unquote, for the most part, are getting the message. It's really hard with college students.
So sure
I think with athletes, they're gonna, they're getting the message. They know they have something at stake that is greater than just your everyday going to class, going to work kind of deal. Whereas, you know, they only get a limited window in which to participate in collegiate athletics. And so it hits home with them, I'm sure, harder than it does with the general population who's like, hey, we're here to party and enjoy college, and we only get 4 years to do that, so we're going to party as much as we can. You know, they don't really maybe think about the other effects that those actions can have.
Well, to Friday's Zoom call, and I guess your maybe one or two of the main takeaways from that press conference would be what, Dave?
One of the big takeaways, of course, would be the social justice discussions that have been spilling over into sports and, you know, really took center stage last week at the highest levels of the NBA, Major League Baseball, even the NHL, which is a place maybe I'm stereotyping, but wouldn't expect that to really trickle down to. But both Lawrence White, one of the defensive backs, and Xavier Hutchinson, a receiver, who were part of that call along with Coach Campbell, talked about, you know, they've talked about these topics within the team and amongst each other and in an organized kind of fashion. And Matt Campbell talked about how they, you know, one of the things that they were really doing to put their words into action is to get everybody registered to vote. And he said they expect everybody on the team to get their registration for voting completed by the end of this week. So that's a big step forward for them. There was some hints maybe from Lawrence White in particular that we might see some kind of public demonstration. He didn't really give too much away because he said they wanted to keep, you know, the discussions about that front kind of within the walls until it actually is time. But I wouldn't be surprised, maybe I'm reading between the lines more than I should, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of public demonstration maybe we saw in that Central Arkansas Austin Peay game, you know, the Central Arkansas, everybody on their sideline raising fists before the game. You can imagine something like that happening in college football games across the country, really. So we'll see if something like that does crop up at Iowa State when that first game comes around next Saturday.
I'm glad you brought up Lawrence White because it seems like he's really taking a leadership role. And, you know, for whatever reason, maybe I'm just the only one guilty of it. When you talk about that, what we think is a really good defense at Iowa State, we talk about the, you know, the front seven, and we throw Eisworth into the mix. And Trent and I are both high on Tavon Kyle, we think is going to be a really good player. But for whatever reason, Lawrence White, who's playing his final season in Ames, maybe doesn't get the accolades he deserves. And he's certainly taken a leadership role. And I believe that Coach Campbell, from reading between the lines, is welcoming that leadership role that Lawrence White is putting himself in.
Yeah, I think you're right. And White talked a bit on that Zoom call Friday about what he's learned from Greg Eisworth and how he's matured under his tutelage. And now White is in that position where he is a senior leader, and guys are going to be looking to him now for leadership and to set an example. And he seems to be taking that quite seriously. He's also a criminal justice major at Iowa State, and, you know, he's talked about too finding solutions on the social justice front in his hometown of Bakersfield, California. So he's showing a lot of maturity on and off the field, and he's a guy, I'm sure, that will be leaned on. He really established himself, I think, last year as a solid defensive player. I don't know if he's going to be all conference or anything like that, but he's a guy they have been relying on and will continue to do so going into this season.
Offensive line remains, I think, the biggest question with this team. Of course, we know Colin Newell and Trevor Downing, who's seen plenty of playing time. But outside of that, the great unknown, Joey Ramos, feels like they've been talking about him for 3 years. He's still just a redshirt sophomore, but that's another name that's been out there a whole lot. What did Coach Campbell have to say about the offensive line and their development here during camp?
Yeah, he didn't really commit to anything on the in terms of a depth chart or starters, but beyond the two guys you mentioned. And then I was surprised he didn't maybe talk more about Ramos, because he did get a little experience the last couple seasons. And he's a guy, like you said, he's been getting a lot of talk as one of the future stars of the offensive line. So, and I don't know if that's necessarily a knock on him or just an acknowledgement that the competition continues and there's a lot to be sorted out for the three other starting positions on that line. So that's a work in progress, and Coach Campbell's not the kind to tip his hand unless he absolutely has to or is absolutely certain that he knows who's going to start. And at this point, the three of the five spots on the offensive line are still up in the air.
Travis Hines wrote about this. I think it's a really good topic as far as when do you think we're going to see certainly the team will know before us and the school will, but when do you think they'll go public with guidelines on to what is going to bring about a cancellation as far as number of positives? Is that how they're going to do it, you think, Dave? Has there been any speculation as, you know, if you hit X or if it's an entire position group like we've seen at Oklahoma, like we've seen at LSU, an entire position group they've had to quarantine at the same time. Don't you think that we should see some guidelines here from the conference pretty soon as to how they're going to go about that?
I think we should, and I think this is the week to do it, because if you wait till next week, it might be too late to, you know, put whatever guidelines or rules you want into place. And I swear I saw some stuff on Twitter, some writers who are exploring this and looking into, you know, what some of these conferences are considering. And I can't remember if that's Sports Illustrated or The Athletic or something like that. But there's been some reporting being done on this that I've seen going around today that will probably know more than I would. But, you know, there needs to be a set of guidelines, a clear standard for the Big 12, if not the other conferences, to say if you have X number of players or Y number in a position group that can't play, then you need to sit out and delay the game, or heaven forbid, have a forfeit. I'm sure they'll do everything they can to make the game good down the road if they can. But there needs to be a pretty clear set of guidelines. And I think that's something we're seeing, you know, with the Big Ten. They haven't made it clear the reasoning behind their move to just wait, at least postpone until spring at the soonest. With the Pac-12, they set out their reasoning very clearly, and you haven't heard much controversy from parents and others about that decision in that space. So that, you know, goes back to something we talked about before. You need clear communication. You need to go public and be transparent and say, here's what we expect, and here are the guidelines we're going to follow. And the sooner you get settled on that, the more reasonable those are, and the faster everybody can implement those, the better off everybody will be.
No Big Ten football this fall, so I got to ask a Big Ten-like question here. The punter situation. Last year, we saw Corey Dunn have to sit out the year. His first big appearance came in the Cy-Hawk game a couple years ago and struggled, but turned into a nice punter, had the injury last year. Rivera filled in for him. Any word at all? Has there been any conversation who the front runner is going to be and where Dunn is on his return from the injury a year ago?
We didn't get an injury update yet, actually Coach talked about the punting situation a little bit on Friday, and he had a lot of good things to say about Rivera and what he's been doing to get himself into position to play and kind of be the guy when it comes to punting, the guy that, you know, everybody wants to see on the field as little as possible, but nonetheless, somebody you probably are going to need to come through and make a big kick for you at some point. It sounds like he feels pretty confident in what Rivera brings to the field for Iowa State in that regard.
When will we find out what time the next Saturday's game is, Dave? Any idea?
Kind of expecting some today, and the day's not out yet, so yeah. We might hear something this afternoon yet. If not, I'm not quite sure. I guess it could come any moment now between now and, you know, hopefully by the weekend we know for sure, so everybody can make their plans. The farther in advance you get word about that, the better off we all are too, so we know how to set our DVRs and get to the stadium and all that stuff. So hopefully, I'm hoping by the end of the day, that's the typical window, because since we're less than 2 weeks out now, but it could be maybe a little bit shorter than that as they still you know, work on everything. You'd think, you know, it might be easier to do the scheduling because there are going to be more open TV windows, but luckily for everybody, I'm not in charge of those things.
Dave, we'll talk to you on Friday. Have a wonderful week. Thank you, Dave Sproul.
My pleasure, guys.
Thank you. Dave Sproul, KSI in Ames. Iowa State plays on KASI. Dave, oh, I forgot to ask. Well, ask him Friday. Do you know who Ames plays this week?
Oh, not offhand. No.
They gave up a, Jesus, 80-something points.
Almost 500 yards rushing out of the Dodgers. 493. They averaged 12.3 yards per carry in an 81-54 Dodger win over the Little Cyclones. Let's pull up the Ames schedule here. I got it here in front of me. They have Urbandale, who had a shootout of their own. They're up big against Johnson. Johnson came roaring back down, I think 24, to take the lead in the second half, and then ultimately Urbandale got it done late in that one. A lot of great games on Friday night, and we'll get more of them this Friday.
And Hoover put one in the win column.
Yeah, big time.
We'll take a timeout. I just see there's a piece came out. SI.com has published something along what will it take for a Big 12 game to be postponed. I don't think there's any clarity. There's just speculation at this point from the writer, but we should know that this week as well. Miller and Condon till noon. Come back, finish the hour. A high school football conversation to start hour number two with Cody Goodwin. Scott Dockerman is here as well. Miller and Condon till noon is Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and
106.org.
Minutes, first hour of the program. Miller and Condon till noon. Cody Goodwin coming up in about 10 minutes. Scott Dockerman in about a half an hour or thereabouts. You know, speaking of Iowa State, as we just were, there's going to be an Iowa State sound off this year down the hall, down the dial following the game on 1040 WHO. Heather Burnside and Emery Songer will host Cyclone Sound Off following each one of Iowa State's games this fall.
Yeah, looking forward to that right after the Lear Field coverage finishes up with the post-game show. Chris Williams and others involved in that. You jump over to WHO, just make the flip over, and you're good to go for a couple hours more of Cyclone Talk after the 10 regular season games and a bowl game. Do you anticipate?
I've heard not a peep about bowl games, other than the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you know what? The question I asked Bill Bender the other day, I think it's about the Rose Bowl. Yeah, the Rose Bowl is a playoff. I get it. Mm-hmm. But the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, I believe, will play in whenever in Pasadena. I mean, I'm talking like February or March this year.
So you are still on the January start, finish up, end of February, and play one other game, a bowl-type game in March sometime.
For the Big Ten winner and the Pac-12 winner.
You're not of the belief that this momentum towards Thanksgiving is lead to more momentum towards October?
Well, I'm hopeful.
But you're not optimistic.
No way. No chance.
I'm still optimistic.
Well, maybe
I'm crazy.
Yeah,
I
crazy.
Might be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get why you're optimistic. I'm optimistic that way.
Any
I just
little
don't think
nugget
it's realistic.
That I read that, yeah. And you know me, I like to live in reality. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is one I'm not living in reality.
It cuts a little close.
It does. Yeah. I just, my Facebook memories, those pop up. I know you're not on Facebook, but popped up over the weekend a game from 6 years ago. There was an August day. It was 2014.
And who are they playing? Who are they opening the season
against?
Against
you and I.
Okay.
You know, 2014 was a pretty crappy year for Iowa football. Uh-huh. That was the year that ended with the That's Football Nebraska game. I would take that crappy year of Iowa football right now as opposed to what we have in front of us.
Which is absolutely nothing. Anyways, hour two coming up next. Look forward to that with the Cody Goodwin and Scott Dockerman. Fun hour number one. Lots of good discussion on the high school situation. We'll have more of that coming up. Got another keyword for you as well at about 20 after 11. Miller and Condon take you until noon. On Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.